Good evening, everybody. This is the Hologram Radio Show. Welcome to our listeners. I'm Cheryl Catherine Smith.
I'm Ash Riot.
And we are Hologram. We are a band, and we also are women with a bit of a mission. Would you say that's true?
I'd say it's very true.
Not only are we artists, but we have a desire to bring love to the world, to bring peace to the world. To bring harmony in all things that we do, including our music, and all people that we meet. That being said, it doesn't mean that we're not without anger, frustration, challenges, and fear.
Fear.
So here we are. Our topic of the evening is our deepest fear. We're going to talk about fear tonight. And if those of you who looked on our website, the BBS Radio website, where we have our blurbs for our shows, I would encourage you to check them out. I do list the show's topics, and then you can have a bit of a go-ahead in terms of what we're going to be talking about and get your questions all ready and your comments all ready for us for the show. Today, I put up for the blurb one of James Douglas Morrison's, otherwise known as Jim Morrison, the poet and the musician. I put one of his quotes on, and this is what the quote is. Expose yourself to your deepest fear. After that, fear has no power, and the fear of freedom shrinks and vanishes. You are free. That is one quote that I wish to discuss tonight. We're going to talk a little bit about our own personal, you know, experiences and views on fear. But I also, for those of you who are privy to Marianne Williamson's Return to Love, her book Return to Love, in that book she has Our Deepest Fear, where I got the title from. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later on. That has been contributed and attributed to Nelson Mandela in his speech when he was freed from prison. He spoke directly from that. And so a lot of people think Nelson Mandela actually created Our Deepest Fear, but it was Marianne Williamson. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But first, we're just going to talk about Jim's quote and also just our own views, ideas on fear. And for those of you who are interested in talking to us about your fear or about what we're speaking of, if anything prompts you to share, please call in at 888-815-9756. So Ash, do you want to start us off a little bit? Do you have any comments about Jim's quote or anything you want to, anything that you're inspired to share?
I'll talk a little bit about Jim's quote. I think that Jim Morrison is a brilliant poet, and I think he's a brilliant poet before he's even a brilliant musician. I think that he's an exceptional musician, but I think his music was his music because his poetry was his poetry. And he fused the two together so perfectly. And I just... anything that comes out of that dude's mouth is awesome. And I definitely got to say that his outlook... I remember there was even another quote about death, and it was really cool. I'll find it and look it up, and whatever, I'll post it. But it was... This quote on fear is so absolutely, it's truth to me, you know, because fear is, I don't even know what to say. Like after hearing that, like, I can't really, I'll just expand on it from my point of view.
So let's talk about how you exposed yourself to your deepest fear, because that's what the quote starts out with. Mm-hmm. He suggests that we each expose ourselves to our deepest fears.
Well, exactly, because I think when you do that, you finally... You get to know your fear, because, I mean, even your fear, when you're fearing it, you don't want to surround yourself with it, you don't want to learn about it, you don't want to even just look it in the eyes, right? So once you're exposed to it and you throw yourself into that ocean of your fear, you have to learn to swim in it. Like, you have to. So, I mean, of course you're going to be set free once you realize that a fear is It's not really a fear. It's just a...
Give an example.
All right, example. Okay, so the one I was talking to you about earlier. Okay, so when I was in kindergarten, my biggest fear in life... Actually, I have two real good ones. When I was in kindergarten, I was absolutely terrified of being left alone. Like, on my first day of kindergarten, I'm sure other kids have gone through it, but I was it was really, like, almost irrational. Like, I was petrified of being left alone. And even when my mom would come to for coffee breaks, like, she'd come to volunteer and go on coffee breaks at school, I'd be so just... I would just be so distraught that teachers would have to take me out of the room, and I'd have a breakdown outside of the room with them, and they'd be holding me because I just could not, like, just being left alone. Like, it wasn't as bad just getting dropped off at school or anything because I knew I was going, and, you know, it's a little bit different. I got out of the car, I walked, you know, whatever. But when somebody was with me and left me, that was the hardest thing for me to deal with ever. So it just kind of, you know, it dissipated after a while. And I was also really scared of teenagers when I was a kid. I was really, really scared of them. And I'm sure there's many reasons for that. I mean, you know, bigger people, you're kind of like, oh, no, you know, they're much older than me. You're not too sure what they're up to. But, I mean, they really, really petrified me. So once I became a teenager, that fear was gone. But the whole fear of being left alone, I think, really served me. Because as soon as I kind of... looked that in the eye, like, after, I remember just, like, being annoyed with people or just needing some time alone and being scared to have that time alone, going, well, I'm going to be left alone with my thoughts, or, you know, it's going to be really, really strange as I've been afraid of it so long. But as soon as I was left alone, just really, truly, like, you know, out of my own will, left alone, I really saw that I could really get along with myself. And now I love solitude so much. But I think if I didn't have a fear of it, I wouldn't really appreciate the solitude that I have. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you think of something that you're scared of. Anything. You know, it could be spiders. It could be bugs. It could be, you know, heights. It could be anything like that. And as soon as you kind of just master that, like Jim was talking about, it can't control you anymore. And I think that's brilliant. Like, however he expressed that is brilliant.
So what I want you to talk about right now, then, you're sharing childhood fears, but I know you quite well, and I know that you have a fear of spiders.
Yeah.
So why don't you talk about that one, because that's a current fear of yours, and I'm not afraid of spiders at all. I'm not afraid of bugs. So I kind of tease you a little bit about it. Not that I actually swing spiders in front of your face or anything, but...
I did that with my aunt once. She was drunk, and I put a spider on her shoulder. It was a fake one. And she literally, like, she had almost a heart attack. Like, I felt so bad. So fears now, definitely spiders. I'm just scared of them so much because I'm allergic to them. So as soon as, like, I think of one even near me, I just get so freaked that I could have a bite, or it's just, I don't know, living in a basement, there's a lot of them, and it's just, I feel violated when they are in my space, and I don't know how to get over that fear, but maybe Jim will help with his quote, I don't know, because I don't know about that one, I don't know if I could get over it. I need hypnotherapy, I think.
Yeah, we'll get our friend Jeannie to give you some hypnotherapy.
Yeah, yeah.
The reason why I brought that up is because fear transcends, and it transforms, right, throughout our lives. And you're speaking of childhood fears, and then you have adult fears, and the spider one probably has been with you since you were a child. You probably remember it as far back as when you were a child, and you've carried it over into your adulthood. So, you know, fear is something that, my point is that fear is something that we can actually have experience of when we're children, and some of it we can get over, like your fear of being alone and left abandoned by your mother. And some we continue to bring with us. And so my point with the spiders is, like anything, fear is very... It limits our life experience, because any time that we live in fear, any time we allow a fear to kind of take over, we are limiting our own life experience, because we basically shrink.
And it also brings...
We don't expand.
Exactly. And it also brings... Like, it's a closing off. To me, fear is a closing off. It's kind of like folding your wings. You know what I mean? Like, I can't... I couldn't imagine living... In total fear of a lot of things. Like, there's people who are scared to go outside. There's people who are scared to just, like, you know, open themselves up. And, to me, fear brings about resentment as well. I mean, because even the people who are doing quite well and who aren't afraid of what you're afraid of, you create a resentment towards them because, you know, for some reason you can't quite get over your fear. Like, you know, if there was like a whole bunch of flies in here and me and some spiders teamed up to like, you know, we joined forces or something, you know, maybe we'd be friends and stuff, but I'm kind
of
scared.
But then that really beautiful part of you that doesn't want to ever cause any harm to any animal, insect, or creature.
I couldn't really.
Wouldn't want those flies and
but
whatnot
you know what?
To get rid of the spiders.
I'm petrified of spiders, but the other day my friend Hans was over, and there was a really, really, really large spider that crawled out from behind my dresser. Now, it was big enough to, like, you could hear it move, okay? Like, it had hair. And I shouldn't be telling you this now as we're sitting right by the dresser. But anyway, it was so big, but I can never kill anything. I don't like to. I still feel bad from killing a spider last summer while I talked to you on the phone. Like, I can't kill anything. And so I got a cup, put it around the spider. I was petrified. But you know what was nice to me? And then I brought it outside and left it there. And I said goodbye and bless you. Have a nice life.
Oh, aren't you sweet? You're not actually killing your fear.
That's right. I'm letting the fear go. It probably has a name and a mother or a son or
maybe
something.
It's Charlotte. She's come back 20 lifetimes later. Anyways, I am drifting. I would like to talk a little bit about what it means to me. Now, I've basically lived my life. I feel quite confident saying this. I've lived most of my life facing my deepest fears. The only thing that I haven't decided that I would do, one of my big fears, is jump out of an airplane. And I think that's just self-preservation. I'm not really thinking I want to kind of crash.
You went on Goliath.
Well, yeah, I went on Goliath. I love roller coaster. You know, give me the biggest, scariest roller coaster, any ride, I'm
Goliath
there.
Goliath is huge. What about King Ka? Okay? That's like almost 500 feet.
I'm a bit of a thrill seeker. I always have been. Like, even as a kid. I mean, I was on motorcycles. I was four-wheeling around places. I still want to go white water rafting. I haven't done that yet. I've done all sorts of mountain kind of adventures and stuff. I'm a bit of a thrill seeker. So, you know, that kind of, for me, I need a little bit of adrenaline rush. I like that. But as I get older, I think, you know, we get a little more, you know, less inclined to kind of jump out of airplanes and bungee jump or whatnot. But I'm talking about fear in terms of not just actual fear of doing things, of physical, causing ourselves physical harm. But what about fear about emotional harm or mental harm or that perception of things could cause us emotional pain, right? Some of us live in fear of not wanting to be hurt, so we basically shrink. For example, fear of being hurt in love, so then we choose not to love. Or we hold ourselves back a little bit in love because we think, well, if we give or surrender completely, we're going to end up getting hurt. So we kind of, if we go into this, any relationship, whether it's a love relationship with regards to romantic love, like a marriage, or if it's a friendship, you know, if any of us are afraid of getting hurt because of love, and I think this is a big one for a lot of people, and I've even experienced this myself, is, you know, I love that saying, love like you've never been hurt before, because I think it's imperative that we do that. And I think it's imperative that whenever we're making a decision to do anything, that we always jump in, all feet, all in, right?
Yeah.
Because how else can we get the full-on experience of it? If we're always holding ourselves back, we're only getting a part of the full experience. We're actually causing ourselves harm, and we're taking something away from ourselves as opposed to giving us something. And I also think, of course, fear means lack of trust, right? You know, Jim talks about the fear of freedom. And I thought that was really interesting. How many of us are afraid to truly be free?
That's true.
And there's a lot of freedom in being completely open, completely honest, completely vulnerable, completely trusting.
To a lot of people, freedom is like anarchy. You know what I mean? It's like, how will they ever control their thoughts, their moods, their actions if they have complete freedom? You have to trust yourself. I mean, if you don't trust yourself, how are you ever going to feel that freedom that you need to feel?
And this is another reason why. I mean, there's a lot. I personally, this is Cheryl. I'm not going to speak for Ash, so you know who we are. I'm Cheryl, and I'm saying this. I've spoken quite publicly about religion and my ideas about religion, having been very much involved in religion as part of my life. I can speak for Ash, she says. I find that what religion does for the most part, again, don't take me saying it's all religion, but for the most part, my experience is that it basically is all about lack of freedom. Because it doesn't allow for anybody to make up their own mind based on feeling and instinct. It's all about rules and regulations and being told what it is that we need to do to garner that heavenly entrance, that ticket, that golden ticket, whatever that may be. So this is another reason why I really don't feel that religion serves for the most part, because it doesn't allow us the freedom. It's basically all based in fear, fear of judgment, fear of hell, fear of losing out, fear of oneself. I don't even think that religion, for the most part, allows us to be who we are, because it's telling us that we're not good enough. I mean, if we're starting out as sinners, what hope do we have? And I honestly, with all my heart, will say this too. I have a inner knowing, I'll be this bold, that it wasn't Jesus Christ's intention to have people be afraid in terms mm-hmm. of the Christian church. It was never about that. And I've said this too, that I don't think that Jesus would even go to the Christian church. I don't think that Jesus would ever support the Christian church.
I mean, you look at it, and Jesus has always been accepting of everybody. And it's not like, I remember even growing up in Christian school from kindergarten to grade 12, I'm very grateful that I did go to Christian school because I got to learn a lot and have a lot in my back pocket about religion. I really, really feel happy. It's not, you know, direct opposition of it. That's why, you know, I'm thankful I went. But, you know, I did learn a lot and I did meet a lot of really cool people who really did exude what I believe true Christianity should be about.
Yes.
So I did meet a lot of people like that. You know, I've seen so much of the opposite of that. Like, even going to churches that, you know, some of the kids at my school went to, I'd been to a few of them or whatever. And if you weren't rich and drive a certain car or family didn't go to Hawaii every year, I mean, you were absolutely shunned. It's like, and their excuse was, well, God wants us to have these riches. So, you know, if people don't have that, then, you know, they can't truly, you know, feel the love of the Lord and stuff like that. And the Lord didn't bless them with money for a reason because they have a lesson. It's like, religion is not money. Religion is not fear. And just because I didn't have too much money and I, you know, I didn't want to fear them. I didn't want to fear. I mean, like, I've seen such a fear instilled even in kids through religion.
So I think it's really important for everybody to recognize fears, and whatever you decide to do, whatever each of us decide to do in our lifetimes, is to look at it and look at how it feels, everything. Mm-hmm. Now, there's taking healthy risks, too. For example, if I go on Goliath, the roller coaster, I'm afraid, but I know that, you know, it's a healthy risk because, I mean, there's a risk to anything that
you fall too high.
But the fact is that they've taken care and attention, and they've, you know, the engineers have designed this with safety in mind, and I trust that I'm safe, but I'm afraid because I know how it's going to feel. And there's that fear of, oh, the falling and the sense of, you know, you know, impending doom. I don't know.
That's too high. Go on YouTube, look up Goliath roller coaster. She went on that.
I went on that. It was amazing. I love it. I'd go on it again. But my point there is if we take a look at every decision we make, and if we look at it as a healthy risk or a non-healthy risk, if we can actually be honest with ourselves and see things as healthy risks and non-healthy risks, we'll go back to love. Let's go back to love. You make a decision to get involved in a love relationship, right? Well, a lot of people are afraid to make that decision because they've been hurt before, they've been married before, they were in a relationship before, their partner cheated on them, their partner was mean to them, their partner beat them up, I mean, or their partner just didn't make them happy, I don't know, whatever reason. And so then we suddenly, our fear becomes a personal thing, mm-hmm. and we own it. We go, well, I own this, I deserve it, I can have it, because look at what life did to me. It hurt me. Mm-hmm. Someone hurt me. They betrayed me. They didn't tell. Whatever it is that we say. And so I'm taking that hurt. I'm taking that fear. I'm taking that to you, mm-hmm. to my next relationship or my next experience with a human being. And I think this is where most of us cause ourselves harm. I sincerely do, because we feel that because we had an experience that it means it will be our next experience and our next experience and our next experience. And I think we can see this globally as well, because history, we look at history, the history of war, for example, and we keep repeating the same mistakes.
Yeah, history
history has not changed. I mean, we're repeating it, repeating it. We think we've transcended, that we've evolved to a point where we can make different mistakes, or that we are small, you know, much smarter and more wise, and we have wisdom, we have technology, whatever, and we won't make the same mistakes. But if we have the humility to really look at our history, we can recognize that we just continue. It's like we're in this hamster wheel, this mm-hmm. loop of insanity, because insanity is doing the same things and expecting mm-hmm. different results. So, you know, fear, war is all based in fear.
It's true.
Right? And I'm so anti-war. I can't begin to tell you how anti-war I am. And I would like to see, I ultimately, I'm with Yoko and John. I not only want to give peace a chance, but I want peace to reign in this planet and on this planet. And, you know, a lot of people will think I'm nuts, or they'll, you know, say I have lofty ideas and goals and that's impossible. And I say, BS, it's not impossible. We can all pull together. Mm-hmm. It's just a mindset. It's us becoming humble, grabbing onto some humility, starting to trust ourselves and our highest selves, our higher knowing that we don't have to tell others how to behave. Mm-mm. They can take care of themselves.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, like what you were saying about the fear and stuff, and like the history and how it repeats itself. I was watching TV the other day, and I came upon, I don't remember what channel it was, but you know the movie Bowling for Columbine, right?
Yes.
And like, how many school shootings have just repeated themselves? But what I really kind of it struck me so hard is that, you know, how like Marilyn Manson, okay, was totally, completely blamed for Columbine just because he was different. You know what I mean? Like, people are afraid of what they don't understand. How many rednecks are going to understand Marilyn Manson's message? You know what I mean? Like, how many... And it's sad, right? Like, you can't... Like, different sects can't open up to other people's messages. It's hard. That's why, like, I really, truly don't want to fear anybody. Whether it's religion or whatever, I'm not going to fear it, but I'm not going to support it necessarily. And it doesn't mean I'm going to go after them. Like, it was just, for me to watch, and, like, he did a, I guess he was on the movie, Bowling for Columbine, and they interviewed him. And I thought, you know what, like, it's not your fault that two kids open shooted. You know what I mean? It's not his fault just because they listen to his music. And there's nowhere anywhere that it says that in his music that he's urging people to kill somebody or kill himself or anything like that. But what I'm saying is it's that fear, you know, they'd rather not blame themselves. It's the fear of not wanting to be wrong, or that they could have, like a parent could have, you know, done something. It's like, okay, it's somebody else has got to be influencing our kids. You know, they're afraid of the media. They're afraid of everything when, you know, it's not always the case.
Well, back when Charles Manson murdered Sharon Tate and the Bianca family, and on, I think that was 1969, August, if memory serves, Charles Manson was listening to the Helter Skelter record by the Beatles, and so it was believed that the Beatles' Helter Skelter record mm-hmm. caused Charles Manson to decide that he needed to murder people. In that same regard, you're saying this with the Columbine. You know, mm-hmm. they're listening to Marilyn Manson, they're hearing a message, or so they might even think they are, and then suddenly, you know, let's point the finger at art, let's point the finger at music,
exactly.
let's point the finger at...
There's got to be something deranged in the person, not the art.
Well, of course there does. There is. And I think when we come from that place of fear, we're going to grab onto anything that supports our fear, because mm-hmm. Fear is very much like a disease that wants to be fed. It's mm-hmm. like addiction. We can actually be addicted to our fear.
Oh, of course.
Right? And so some of us are addicted to our fear, and we can even, from a world perspective and a world view, actually consciously, in terms of us collectively, be addicted to fear. Mm-hmm. You take a look at the media. Do we have, you know, lovely papers? I never read the newspaper.
No
and
way.
Ash's family gets the newspaper delivered to them, and I was just reading it just the other day. And I'm going through the paper, and I'm going, I don't see one good thing in this paper. I don't see one good thing. It's all death, murder, you know, accidents,
they
people dying.
They want to keep us so afraid.
Well, and look at, you know, even horror films and whatnot. I mean, let's get scared. Let's see slasher films.
Yeah, everybody loves the movie Saw, and it's all about cutting people up.
I mean, I can't stand that kind of stuff.
I can't watch it.
And again, that's personal. But what is it about our society that we're just really addicted to fear, to being afraid, to living in fear, to propagating fear? And I really think it's just a mindset. And I also, I've done quite a bit of public speaking, and I've done, you know, I say that I'm an inspirational speaker, and I have done a lot of speaking. And I remember one time there was another horrible shooting at a university. And
Virginia Tech?
I believe that might have been what it was. I'm not going to, don't quote me. I can't remember at this moment. I wasn't thinking of talking about it, but it just came up. But I remember saying I was speaking the next morning after it happened, so it was very fresh. And I remember saying that this gentleman, it was a gentleman who shot a lot of people in the university. And I remember saying that it was not just the gentleman's fault. Now, he did make that decision to do that. But how about us as a society? How did we contribute? I think most of us, we don't know. No, I don't do any of that. I make a conscious decision to be a good person. I don't do this. I don't do that. But if we were to really pay attention and to own each and every one of our thoughts, each time we act out negatively, each time we have a negative thought about someone or something, and if we indulge it, I'm not saying if you have a thought and you just kind of discard it, but if we indulge, you know, hatred or resentment or anger, even towards our neighbor, does that not form an energy which can actually penetrate us collectively? If we were to start taking responsibility for ourselves and see how each action, each follow through, each thing that we decide to do, everything has a cause and effect on this planet, and with and from each other. I think that would change a lot of people in terms of what they were doing. You know, we had that Pay It Forward a while ago,
The
random acts of kindness that Oprah Winfrey was really espousing, and that's the kind of stuff. See, that's the opposite energy. That's doing things just because, not even doing things incognito, not even letting people know that you're, you know, one thing I like to do, I'm telling you now, but I do, I like to plug people's machines, the parking meters.
Oh.
Like, you just kind of, you know, if someone's
like the meter
over.
Like the fairy on Jackass. The guy dresses up as a
really?
Fairy, and he goes in and puts and he calls himself the meter fairy, and cops follow him, and he, apparently it's a federal offense, and he keeps doing
it. Are you serious?
It. Oh, yeah.
It's a federal offense. Well, then, yeah, take me to jail.
Seriously, it's illegal.
Well, that's ridiculous.
Like, it's highly illegal. If you get caught doing that, you didn't know that?
No, I didn't.
Oh.
And to me, what's the problem? If someone's blinking and I notice it, you know, put a quarter in, no big deal. Maybe they got sidetracked. Maybe their hairstylist was a bit longer than they thought. I don't know. But that's just a small example of nobody knows that I do that. They probably don't
know.
Now
that everybody does.
Well, not really. Yeah, they're going to come and cuff me. But anyway, no, the point is that most people probably wouldn't even know. They would just think, oh, geez, I guess I put more money in the meter than I thought. And that doesn't matter. The thing is that if we kind of look out for each other, we're looking out for ourselves. If we don't reside in fear, then we're opening ourselves to everybody. I'm not naive, because I've had life experience where I've seen some pretty dark things, and I've had really dark things happen to me. So I'm not sitting here blindly and naively saying everybody just trust the entire planet and throw caution to the wind, don't trust your instincts, because we have gut feelings and instincts for a reason, and not everybody on this planet is enlightened. Not everybody on this planet wants to bring good and love, right? There are people on this planet, unfortunately, that want to bring pain. And they want to bring fear to us. So pay attention to your instinct, and pay attention to, you know, for example, when you get a bit of a tug that you shouldn't be walking late at night on a street, or you've got, you know, you get a feeling about somebody, you're going, I don't think I trust this person. I don't think I'm going to be, you know, taking a ride with them, or whatever it is. Trust that. Trust your first thought. But in the meantime, bless them and just kind of go on with your day, because if we can just keep doing our own bit, I think eventually it can even affect people that are, you know, consciously trying to cause harm to the planet, because ultimately it's because of their own fear that they're lashing out. Fear causes
exactly.
people to lash out and create
say.
Fear.
That's what I was going to say. A lot of times people are wanting to cause fear because they're so immersed in it themselves. And really, like truly, misery does love company.
Yes.
And so, I mean, if, you know, if even like, I've noticed even a lot of people like who've been kind of, I don't know, just, I'm going to say this, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but very needy. It's all about like, you know, they're never needy if they're happy. Sure, they're like, yeah, I just want to tell you I'm happy, and then they're going to leave it at that. If they're pissed off or they're just down in the dumps, they're going to want you there with them. And I think that in itself describes really well the difference between, like, health and unhealthiness. It's like any negativity and stuff. Sure, well, you have an opportunity to work through them, or a lot of people can help you. But, you know, there's sometimes when you just... that fear of, I guess, going back to being alone, or, you know, and being in that fear without somebody else to either pull you out of it or be in there with you, it's nothing is worse than that.
So I just want to say that fear isn't always bad, because we're talking
no.
about, you know, trusting your instinct. There's time when fear will grip you. Pay attention to your body, because your body doesn't lie. And in bodies tell us when things aren't quite right. I think a lot of times our heads talk us out of things. But if you pay attention to your body and you pay attention to what your body's doing, and if you start feeling that grip, for me, I get the fear right in my chest and I get a gripping around my throat. I pay attention to that. And then I ask myself, is this a rational fear or an irrational fear? Is this something that I need to face? Is this, because I also notice that fear feels almost identical to excitement.
Mm-hmm.
So I get the same feeling when I'm going to go on a roller coaster and I'm getting all that fluttery and the squishing of my esophagus a little bit, and, you know, and that's the same feeling I get when it's a fear kind of thing. If I'm, you know, frightened, or I get a sense that someone's not a safe person to be around. So it's interesting to pay attention, right? To
I can't say the word. The thing in your throat, I've never been able to say it.
Esophagus? That wasn't bad. Esophagus.
I've never been able to say the word. See, there's my fear of looking dumb right now.
Well, face it, Ash.
Esophagus. Esophagus.
Well, that was close enough.
Okay.
So then, yeah, facing your fear.
Yeah.
This is one thing I encourage people to do. One of the biggest fears that people have is public speaking.
I'm not afraid of that. Now everybody in the radio world knows I can't say esophagus.
That wasn't bad. You did
Thanks.
It a few times. You faced your fears.
Yeah.
You stepped up.
I've never been able to do it.
But Ash, the fact is you're a performer. I'm a performer.
Yeah.
We, you know, to be a performer requires a lot of courage. Every performer out there, I say kudos, because it's not easy to be a performer. I think a lot of people look at people that are on stage and think, wow, you know, you got it all together, and you can do this. And there's a lot of adulation that happens with people on stage. But what happens is it takes a lot of courage, because to be a performer, it requires a lot of humility and a lot of vulnerability. It's extremely vulnerable to be on stage. You know that you're getting judged. A lot of people will be quick to judge, because there's a sense of, well, who are you to be up there, and why am I not there? So you have to be quite confident in yourself, and you have to risk looking like an idiot, and risk making mistakes and being judged over them. But I'll tell you, there's nothing better than being a performer. And that being said, I want to read now Marianne Williamson's Return to Love, her deepest fear quote, and then we're going to talk some more. Because this speaks about that. It speaks about our deepest fears and in a really beautiful way. So here it is. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God, and I'll say goddess. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure about you. We are all meant to shine, as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God, goddess, that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. And I love that, because it's saying shine, 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 no matter what, even as a performer. And eventually other people will see that they are shining as well, or they can shine just as brilliantly and brightly as you can. Is there anything else you want to add, dear Ash?
Yep. So, for me, like, the whole being on stage thing,
yeah,
that, like, in itself, like, first of all, being on, okay, here's one observation, everybody, listen to this. Being on stage in front of two people is so much worse than being on stage in front of 2,000 people.
I agree.
And the whole thing about it is because vulnerability, when there's numbers, you don't feel so vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
When there's, like, just a couple, knowing that all the attention is, like, you think 2,000 people, they're not all going to be looking at me. But, you know, like, because they must be amongst themselves doing their own thing, right? Like, you see a crowd, they're kind of all... When you're used to seeing crowds, you're seeing crowds doing other things. You're not used to seeing them, like, looking right at you. So when there's two people, you know that they're not just going to be, like, talking to themselves. They'll get bored. They're going to be looking at you.
But isn't that also fear of intimacy, too? Because when you have two people, it's a truly intimate setting. When you've got a crowd, you don't even see people. You just see a crowd. You can't even really see individuals. It's more like, there's a crowd. But when you have a few people in the room, you say, there are people there watching me, you know, watching me intently. And so everything is acute. And every movement you make, you're very conscious of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like even how you're playing the guitar or how your mouth is or do I look okay? Is my hair fine? Do I look, you know, are my shoes done up right? Just, yeah.
Well, exactly. And like, I mean, so as well as music, like a big thing for me is fear of the press. You know what I mean? Like, fear of the media, because really, like, you can, when it's just you, you can control, in a way, more so what's being said about you if you're not in the public eye. Like, you can, like, you know, you can, if there's a misrepresentation, you say it. You talk to the person. If something's being read by thousands, maybe millions of people, you can't go up to everybody, you don't even know them, and fix things.
Well, you can't, but the thing is that we recognize as artists, and we've seen others go before us, they call it putting a media spin on things, right? And the media, unfortunately, because they're so in love with gossip and with sort of focusing on the fear and focusing on, you know, the salacious, oftentimes they'll take an incident that could be your life and just kind of throw it out. I mean, look at the National Enquirer or People magazine, right? Just throw it out of whack or, you know, embellish because it makes it more entertaining, more interesting. So suddenly nonfiction becomes fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, I noticed that, you know, that in and of itself is a fear to face and just to let go, because we can't control what other people say about us. We can't control what other people think about us.
Well,
if people want to spend the time to sit down and chat with us and get to know us and really know who we're about, that's a whole different thing.
Well, you know what? Look what happened to Kurt Cobain when that article in Vanity Fair came out, because Courtney had talked about using heroin during her pregnancy. And some just not awesome person from Vanity Fair had printed that, and it was all a misrepresentation. But because of that, they got their daughter taken away. So I mean, just because of somebody's misrepresentation, things are lost. You know, things can happen. So for me, being I think a legitimate fear is being afraid of people.
Well, okay. So here's where I come from with that. If I lived my life being afraid of people, I wouldn't do anything. I'd sit in my house and I'd put the full, you know, put my blanket over my head and
hide.
But
it's good to be a little bit afraid.
I don't think so. I think it's good to be discerning and to be cautious. I like the saying, love all, trust few. I like that. I can't remember off the top of my head who said it, but love all and trust few.
And I like David Bowie and Trent Reznor's I'm Afraid of Americans. They said it best.
But the reason why I'm saying this is because if we live our life in fear, we're actually not being authentic. And we can't control. I've had people say things that were completely untrue about me. I've heard rumors about me that I'm going, I can't believe that. I can't believe that people would be saying these things. It's so off the wall. But we can't pay attention to that. We can only trust that we're being as authentic as we can. We can't control what someone else is going to say or not say about us. We just have to stay focused on our lives and what it is that we're doing, face our own fears. And the best freedom I ever got was when a counselor told me what other people say about you was none of your business.
That's true.
Okay, and you know,
win.
It's I'm not trying to win.
I've
had people take me. I mean, it's been really crazy. I've had people. I can understand that what Kurt must have gone through, and what Courtney must have gone through. I mean, that's horrible to have your child taken away from you from something that was misunderstood. But you know, unfortunately, people get a little bit overzealous sometimes, and a lot of times it's about power. People want to feel and believe and think they have power, so they will hurt you. Because they have that sense of, well, I'm powerful, I can do this. But this is where I love karma.
But they're also afraid of your power, that's why they're doing it.
Exactly. But if we get too caught up in that, then we just lose the experience of living.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the ultimate trust, is trusting in our paths. Because I've had some pretty awful things happen to me. Mm-hmm. And I've gone, why? And shaken my fist up to this unknown god or goddess. Why? And later just understood why. Right? Later just understood why. So we're going to play our song, The Fusion, because we talk a little bit about fear. And after that, we got a couple of callers. So Don, if you would be so kind as to play The Fusion for us. This is Holograms to the Fusion, written by Ash and me.
Encompasses me beneath the stars above the sea, enthralled on earth watching you, knowing I have a part in this too. Faithlessly watching, wait for dim eyes, severing my old earthly disguise. Enthralled on earth watching you, knowing we have a part in this too. This is a world of illusion, so I honor all delusion. Be not baffled with exclusion, bring all love in for the fusion. Watch the wind blow power out, stronger than what we were of. To me, the forgotten thieves pressed upon these autumn leaves. Angelic hosts be known to us, falling faster than we trust. Watch the circles born of light, speaking while we're all up all night. In a world of illusion, it serves us, yet we must come back to love. The love revolution is within each and every one of us. A knowing, a higher understanding, we all embrace it. All we have to do is accept.
Bye.
And that was The Fusion. And for those of you who heard the lyrics, we're talking about living in a world of illusion, and that ultimately it's about love. And this is an important fact to state. This is my belief, and I've heard others say it. There's only two things that any and all decisions and action can be made from, and one is fear and one is love. So which do you choose, to come from fear or to come from love? We have Carrie on line three. Hello, Carrie. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has. I've been a little sick.
Really? How are you
doing?
I'm
doing it now, but...
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are you feeling better?
I am calling to get over a fear. I'm actually going to get over one now.
Wow, yay. That's so cool.
See if I can do this. Well, Jackie and I, the last couple of days, have been talking about my fears because I have chronic nightmares.
Yes.
And this is so stupid that I'm afraid of this, but when I was young, we'll say young, I'm not going to say how old, I got pregnant. I didn't say anything to anybody, and not the father, not anybody, not my best friend, and I tell my best friends everything. And Jackie's the only person that knows this. At 3 months, I lost my baby.
Wow.
And when I was younger, I was afraid someone was going to find out. And now, as an adult, I have been so afraid to say out loud what happened and the fact that I'm scared that that was my last chance, that I'm never going to have that thing that's mine that I can hold. And so for the first time ever with anyone other than Jackie, I'm saying out loud that, yeah, I'm scared.
Wow.
I'm scared that I'm never going to have that chance again.
Wow.
So there's my fear.
Wow.
Well, as you were saying it, Carrie, I just got goosebumps. And I want to say I'm really grateful that you stepped up and had the courage to share this, because that takes a lot of courage. And it's also basically acknowledging to yourself, to us, to others, this fear, and acknowledging it to the divine universe, whatever you choose to call it, right? Saying, this is what I'm afraid. I'm afraid that this could be my future, right?
Yeah.
And
that one chance when I was younger, that was it. Now I know it wasn't meant to be. There's no way I could have taken care of a baby. There's just no way.
Yeah.
But I'm older now.
So what you've just done, what you've done, Carrie, I want to just say this because I think this is important, something for you to ponder. We started out by saying Jim Morrison's quote, "Expose yourself to your deepest fear. After that, fear has no power, and the fear of freedom shrinks and vanishes. You are free." If you were to expose yourself to your deepest fear, which is, in fact, if you never did have a child, that sounds to me that that's your deepest fear. Is that correct?
Yes, but it's also more that I have to open up to people enough to say I had the chance and now I'm never going to have it again, because I don't do that. I will listen to your troubles till the cows come home, but you don't get to be a part of mine.
Yeah, they belong to me, and they're my secrets, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, you know, this is the first step, and I think it's absolutely phenomenal that you've done this, and thank you. I just want to thank you for trusting us, because this is all about trust, and that's a beautiful thing. It's trusting in the bigger picture. It's trusting what you're sharing. You know, it's a safe place to do that, that it's time, right? It's about timing.
You know, the timing is actually impeccable. We were literally have been talking about my nightmares and what my nightmares are about for 2 days, yesterday and today. So for the show to be about fear was just, yeah.
Well, I love Carrie. My belief is that there are no coincidences, and it's beautiful when we when we look at the synchronicities in each of our lives and just recognize how supported we are, it's quite amazing. I mean, it's quite miraculous the more we actually look and we identify. And this is just one of those examples that, you know, the timing is impeccable because it was meant to be this way, that there is no coincidence that you're able to share this. And I would just like to think that the nightmares might even ease up a little bit now that this has been shared, now that this has been brought to the light, you know?
And that's, you know, kind of the reason we've been delving deeper into my nightmares, trying to get rid of them, because I've had nightmares my whole life. They went from night terrors to just nightmares. But when you have chronic insomnia, and then when you do fall asleep, you wake up in a cold sweat, it's not good. You know, I can't get well if I can't sleep, so I'm trying.
Well, I think as soon as you know, really what you've done with us today, as soon as you kind of look your fear in the face, like Jim said, it doesn't control you anymore. And, you know, you can be free, right? So, I mean, I think that you're already on your way. Once you let things go that have been piling up, you're already on your way back to health.
Well, and that's the really funny thing is, especially before I got medicated, I don't have physical fears, except for spiders. Not down with the spider thing. They make me scream like a girl. I can't handle it.
I don't like them either. I'm not that scared. Yes, I am scared of them, but not that, like, you know, I guess it's like I just don't like them.
Oh, no, I scream and run like a little girl. I can't handle them. But I never had physical fear. I would do things because they scared me. I've done multiple things just because they scare me.
But that's your
site. What name?
Physical
them.
Things and are fine. Emotional
jump
fears.
In?
Yeah, I don't deal with those.
Okay. What? Okay. Yeah. But what things have you done that scare you? Like go on Goliath.
I've been on every roller coaster you could possibly think of.
What about King to Cop?
I've jumped off of roofs onto trampolines.
Oh.
I've jumped off of bridges into water. I've done a lot of things.
OMG.
Most aren't appropriate for, you know, mixed company. But
well, it seems that you've exposed yourself to many of your physical fears, Carrie.
Oh, yeah. I don't fear people. I'm not afraid of them. And I'll do just about anything twice. You know, in case it sucked the first time, it might not suck the second time. So we have to do it twice to make sure. But
admire that.
Emotional fears I don't deal with well. So saying out loud what I said to you is yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah,
and
hard.
That, you know, sometimes, you know, for some of us, it's easier for some of us to jump off a bridge, you know, 50 feet into water below than it is to actually take a healthy emotional risk, right? So it's interesting how each of us deal with fears and the stuff that really scares us versus, you know, what we can kind of handle and share. But, you know, one of the biggest things that I learned, is trust. And it took me a while to trust and to trust that when I would say things, I remember I was told many times that your secrets keep you sick. And I live by that, too, because I know that if I have a secret, if it's something that I don't feel good about or something that's causing me stress or distress, that it's important that I share it. Now, it doesn't mean I share it necessarily, you know, with the entire world, but I share it in the context of feeling that it's a safe environment. And one of the biggest things I did, Carrie, was when I was in recovery is I sat in a room full of women. It was a house where I shared with 10 women, and we had group every day. And I sat and talked to two counselors and 9 other women about my deepest secrets and the stuff that scared me the most. And that was the biggest step in trust I ever took. And I'll tell you this, it was the best thing I ever did for myself because there was a lot of freedom that came as a result of it. And this is what I'm getting with what you just shared. This is a safe environment.
Liberation.
It's all about liberation. It's about liberating ourselves, about freeing ourselves from our fears, about stepping into trust and faith. And that's exactly what you've done. So thank you so much for trusting us and having the faith to do this. And
well,
I just
I just had my 12th anniversary. Jackie and I have been together 12 years. There is nothing she doesn't know about me. There are things she knows about me that no one should really share with the person they're with. You know, she knows everything. And so I have that place. But when it comes to the rest of the world, my family, my other friends, I genuinely have to work on saying, yeah, you know, this is me. But I am lucky that I have Jackie.
Well, yeah, you are.
My head would explode.
Well, we don't want that. I just wanted to say, too, that for us to risk true intimacy is also another really big gift that we can give to ourselves, is when we get intimate with each other. And I'm not talking about physical intimacy. I mean emotionally intimate. And this is what it is. The more intimate we get with each other in this regard, the more we recognize how close and how connected we are and that we're not alone. Mm-hmm. Because that's what I found in the group setting, is that the more I shared, the more I had women going, well, yeah, me too, or I understand that, or I went through that, or this is how I dealt with it. And as a result, I got even greater freedoms, because it wasn't just sort of spinning its horrible web in my mind. It was able to come free and mm-hmm. and start to disentangle, you know, just to
dislodge.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It no longer held power over me. And this is what I'm getting with what you shared. It's about bringing it out to the light, bringing it out so that it doesn't have to cause the amount of the stress and the amount of power that it's been having on you physically and mentally and emotionally. So again, thank you. Thank you so much. And we have to wrap our show up, but I just wanted to say love to you.
Yeah,
thank
we love you,
Carrie.
You so much.
Love to Jax. Congratulations on your 12 years together. I think you got our email, but you know, that's wonderful. And just keep on keeping on. And that's
email
what you guys
anytime.
Are doing. Yeah, definitely. And thank you, Carrie, for sharing this. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for being a part of a moment with me.
Well,
we love to be part of the moment.
We're grateful to be parts of your moments, and thank you for being parts of ours. We're grateful for you. Thank you. Good night.
Much love to both of you.
Much love. Bye, Carrie.
Bye.
Well, that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's amazing. And you know, I would encourage all of you, whatever you're afraid to share, whether it's maybe you've been raped, maybe you've been sexually abused, maybe you've stolen something and don't feel good about it. Maybe you've been doing something that you don't feel good about and something's got a hold of you. Maybe you've got a secret. I would encourage you
to be afraid of the secret.
Not to be afraid of it, to let it go and get the freedom on the other side. And if any of you need to talk to us directly, you can email it at info@hollow-gram.com. If you have any ideas for shows, we welcome that too.
There's always Post Secret. Have you heard of Post Secret?
What?
It's a website where you get to express a secret and you're completely anonymous.
Wow. There you go.
I'll show it to you. Go to Post Secret. It's so cool.
P-O-S-E or P-O-S?
Post.
P-O-S-T?
Yeah.
Post Secret, everybody. That's news to me, Ash. Thanks for sharing that. So in the meantime, fear, love, choose love, and know that we love you. Kiss your trees. Enjoy your environment. All those who come into contact with you. Much love.
Much love.
Hologram out.
Hologram.
See you in two weeks. Talk to you soon. Bye.